No, I think that European cities are fantastic accumulations of, let me say, of infrastructures.
Hello and welcome to European Urbanism, episode 6. And for this episode, which will also be the last episode before the big summer break, I talked to Professor Vigano from the EPFL in Switzerland. And we talked during the lunch hour at the Karlsruhe Dialogues. So he will hear a lot of background noise. It can't be changed. I hope you don't mind.
Yes, I'm Paola Vigano. I'm a professor of urbanism, urban design in Switzerland at Polytechnical School of Lausanne and in Venice and the Architectural School of Venice. I'm an architect and an urbanist, and I work also realizing projects, making designs for cities and territories. I like to move between scales, so the idea that when you deal with space, space is not monoscalar. Space is multiple in its dimensions, and also from the scale point of view, to reflect on the city you need to be very close, to be very detailed, and at the same time you need also to understand some logics that are more extended. And I think we need this today very, very much, to understand that the urban configurations, the city has changed, is not anymore something you can recognize as a different from other environments. And in fact, the urban conditions in which the majority of people, the majority of European for sure, live is a hybrid situation where you have agriculture, you have industries, you have houses, services, and this heterogeneous urban system is what I'm interested in. I'm interested in it for a couple of reasons. The first one is that there is a very severe evaluation of the city when, in general, when you ask people, or when even the policymakers refer to cities, cities seems always to be on one side a place that is producing wealth, of course, but on the other side, the contemporary type of cities are seen as a waste, sprawl, completely fragmented, out of control, chaotic spaces. So first of all, I want to react to this negative image, because that type of city has been constructed by us. It was not someone arriving from another planet. And so it is the result of a lot of different decisions. Some decisions were taken by the policymakers. Many others were taken by the people, by the individuals, by the families deciding to live in a certain place instead of another. Some were taken by big powers, for example, railway companies deciding where a certain line should pass, and many others were taken by small groups, etc. So the city of today is the result of this, also in a way, democratic process in which the different actors, they could take some part of the decisions. And of course, there is not one unique regulatory power that can embrace all this complexity. So cities are horizontal in also in that sense, that there is not only one power that can guide and can govern. We have imagined for a certain time that you could make plans able to structure everything of the city space or of the regional space. We understand today that plans can have a role, but only if they remain extremely attentive and extremely open also to contributions that are coming from other sides. And the result is this heterogeneous urban condition, which I see also as a value. As a value, because inside it there are some potentials. Potentials, for example, to solve or to give possible solutions to some of the questions we have today, some of the challenges, from the ecological point of view, and of course from the social point of view, and from the economic point of view. So first of all, I have worked a lot in my daily work on re-establishing the value of what is there, which means also to read carefully and to listen and to understand those logics that have informed this space.
say you listen and you to read, do you go out or do you?
Yeah, you go out. Absolutely. I mean, you cannot make urbanism without going out. No, it makes no sense. So of course, it's repetitive and circular work in which you you go, you understand, you insert hypotheses, you discuss possibilities, you put also your imagination, you make maps, you make images that can construct a debate, for example, about the future. How can we discuss the future? We have to structure the discussion about the future. For example, scenarios in which you force yourself and the people around to imagine in detail what might be a future if we go along certain directions, for example. For example, one of the scenarios we have proposed since a few years, and it is coming back as an interesting tension, something to be debated, is the no-car scenario. What if the future cities, future extended city, not the center of the city, but the future extended city, will be used without a car? Why without a car? Well, there are ecological reasons, but there are also social reasons. For example, a population that is aging a lot, the European population has this problem, will have problems to drive, for example, alone. So we have to imagine, and of course kids, they cannot use a car. So maybe we have to imagine that to go beyond the car, the centrality of the car, will reveal new possibilities. Not just a problem, it's also revealing new possibility of using space in a different way, of finding a new spaciousness in the city, because all the space occupied by cars might be free. So you can imagine a lot of new things that you can realize in terms of public spaces, but also in terms of form of inhabiting, of living, activities that can use space in a better way, etc. More democratic also from this point of view. I don't really think that the electric car would be a solution, because electric cars needs a lot of electricity, which is not easy if we imagine to get out of the nuclear, for example. So I think there is a strong adaptation that is needed, where new type of mobilities will increase our health, for example, if it is active mobility, will redesign our cities, the space, the public spaces of our cities, and will also probably redesign partially also our house and our apartment, no? Where you have, in any case, you have to give quite a big part of your garden, of your garage, to the car. So this is just an example, and the point is, let's try to imagine that. We don't know if it is interesting, if it is working, but we have, the only tool we have is our imagination, and to discuss what we can imagine. So the second scenario that I briefly introduced today is what will be the future city when the work will be very different from today and much less than today. What are we going to do? How we will use our time, our space also? And I think that there is there an incredible new condition where we have to understand that cities and territories need a lot of work to be maintained. It's not the manufacturer work, it's not the old industries of the past, it's not even the old rural agricultural work of just cultivating fields. It's really something related to the big challenges that territories have to face in the future, the many ecological and environmental risks, for example, that are asking for maintenance, for taking care of the territory. And also, of course, there is the question of the production of food, because we are more and more on this planet. And of course, the question of which type of agriculture, how can we imagine different types of agriculture that are probably much more healthy, but asking much more work. So in that sense, I think, I imagine that we will have our former industrial sites. We have gigantic industrial sites still in Europe that are not used. They will be maybe reused for some new industrial activities that will not ask for a lot of human work, But we, around, we have this incredible new work of maintaining the territory that we have a little bit forgotten, or just given, I don't know, to some public institutions as the rule. But on the contrary, if we imagine this as our,
living space.
Playground, and also our playground, whereas with a societal playground, I think that this might restore on one side the dignity of doing something, of having an occupation, of having a work, and on the other side, really transforming the way in which we maintain, and we maintain in with the value it has our territory.
You are from the EPFL.
Yes, EPFL.
In Lausanne. And I was wondering, how is Lausanne incorporating your work? Because I'm working at the KIT and we have all these discussions about experiments, as you said before, and how to incorporate the space and how to use it as playground. So does this come up at the EPFL, or is it?
Well, I think as EPFL, as all technical schools, has a lot of trust in technology, so in a way the idea that the technology will solve everything. But for example, one of the strategy of these big schools has been the one of decentralizing themselves. Mm-hmm. So in the past years, EPFL has been opening a new part of the school, for example in some alpine valleys in some areas that are a little bit more marginal today. Mm-hmm. And I think that the universities in general, universities today can play an incredible role. I mean, we are crossing this transition, and who more or better than a university can indicate and can test also, as the force, the strength to test some different trajectories. Decentralization, for example, of the universities is of course a very interesting thing. It has to be maintained, not reducing then the university to a kind of second level, second type, second degree of cultural production. So it has to be maintained at the optimal level, but it is an interesting starting point, because in this moment also all the old policies of decentralization that have characterized Europe until the 70s, but then there has been a kind of cutting, selecting, concentrating, and many territories have been left outside of it. No? So the idea of horizontal metropolis is also the idea of rethinking decentralization, in which the question is not to bring something of a little bit of everything in all parts in order just to guarantee a kind of survival. No, but it's really to profit of the capacity of generating wealth that the metropolitan areas they have. And I think that all marginal territories that are close to those metropolitan areas might profit of this, because there is really a production of activities, a production of services, and you can imagine that the digitization can give an incredible contribution to give inhabitability to territories that today are inhabited, but not really giving you the same opportunities that you can find in other areas. So the problem is that these big metropolitan areas are really very concentrated. They are attracting. Mm-hmm. They are too attractive. They attract a lot of jobs fundamentally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally jobs. Yeah. No? So the question of reimagining jobs and to use some of the strength of the metropolitan condition, and universities are for sure probably at the first position on that, because knowledge-based technology, also in general cosmopolitan atmosphere, so you have really an incredible creative richness in those sites. So university can play a very important role in rebalancing, for example, this relation between central and less central territories.
And how is it in Lausanne? I don't know the university, so is it... say it's more decentralized or
starting? It's decentralizing, and this is interesting, yes.
And so how does it do it mobility-wise? Is the public transport good in Lausanne, or is it more that the institutes go out, or is it that students have to move around the city?
When I'm talking of decentralizing, I'm talking of decentralizing at a bigger scale, not just of the city, but really, for example, in a far away Alpine valleys. I'm talking of that type of decentralization. I think that in Lausanne, as in many parts of Europe, the question of the, of mobility is still not solved. There is still a lot of car mobility and not so much mobilities related to active mobilities. Very, very few. So in that sense, there is a project designed to be realized about no car city or no car metropolis. Of course, the point is not no car. I'm not imagining that all cars will disappear, but really to go in that direction in a clear and, you can say, regular way. And the consequences might be really to redesign completely the city. You can imagine to redesign the city just starting from this point, how you change the mobility. And that would be the starting point for a new project for the city, for example. And I think it would be also a more inclusive project for the city.
Is there anything you just want to say about European cities that you want to know everyone to know?
No, I think that European cities are fantastic accumulations of, let me say, of infrastructures. When I go teaching, for example, in the United States or in other continents, each time I have to recognize that what makes the European city different from the others is that in the European city you have a lot of investment in the space, in infrastructures. Although we can be very critical, but then when you go in the American city, in the North American, but of course in the South American, you understand that the difference is that there is not the same accumulation, the same amount of investment, energy, labor, infrastructure, just to organize the space where we live. So they are incredible, I mean, it's an incredible heritage, the European city, although it is not anymore the old city of the past.
This was episode 6 of European Urbanism. My name is Sandy Eschke, and as always, the music was written and produced by Erwin Schmidt. And the next episode will be out after the big summer break in September. I wish you a wonderful summer, and so, see you soon.